Oh boy, this is going to be so much fun. Why? Because today we get to stick it to the life insurance industry and expose their evil ways. Now remember, folks, by the end of the semester, we're going to insult everybody. And so today is time to insult the insurance industry. And remember also that I am an insurance agent. So I'm allowed to say nasty things, true nasty things about insurance agents and insurance companies. And don't worry. Wait till we get to stockbrokers. I'm also a stockbroker, you know, financial representatives. Here on slide number one, we see that they termed the chapter Financial Planning with Life Insurance. Now, why is that? I think it's because some of the insurance companies must have paid McGraw-Hill to put the words financial planning and life insurance together where they have no business doing with one another. Because the insurance companies want you to think of life insurance as a savings vehicle. Do you think of life insurance, car insurance as a savings, or home insurance as a savings? I'm getting ahead of myself. Because you'll see on slide number one, the phrase, buy term and invest the difference. Now, you don't necessarily know what this means at this time, but by the end of our time together today, you will, dear students, and it will possibly mean the difference between tens of thousands of dollars in your retirement accounts. Maybe more than 100,000. Wait, just wait. Now, many people have discussed the difference between term and what we'll eventually find out is called whole life, cash value life, variable life, straight ordinary life, universal life, permanent life. Yeah. But no one did it better, in my humble opinion, than David Chilton in The Wealthy Barber. So we're going to steal, thank you very much, Mr. Chilton, we're going to steal some of his wonderful phrases in our presentation. Slide number two. What is life insurance? Well, life insurance is obtained by purchasing a policy with the insurance company promising to pay a lump sum at the time of the policy holder's death. Well, there are some types that will pay while the policyholder is still alive if they live long enough. Huh? These are whole life policies for, now we shouldn't use the word stupid because it's very nasty. We'll say uninformed, uneducated. But when you see the word uninformed, you know, replace it with stupid because they've been sold a terrible product. And this gets me in a lot of hot water with the life insurance agents that makes a great commission for us and makes the life insurance companies very wealthy. By the way, the life insurance companies are often called the invisible bankers. But is not in your best interest, in my humble opinion. Now, of course, you have to get the other side of the story because there's always two sides of the story, yours and the jerk-offs. Stick with us, okay? Stick with us. And then go talk to an insurance agent who's trying to sell you a whole life policy and realize that he or she's going to make a really great commission. So maybe you're feeling charitable that day. Slide number three. The purpose of life insurance is to protect someone who depends on you from financial loss related to your death. You're not buying it for yourself. You're buying it for the folks you would leave behind in case of a premature death. There are other reasons that we discuss to make charitable bequests upon your death. I don't think it's a good idea. There's better ways of doing that. To leave as part of your estate to avoid estate taxes, be very, very careful, dear students. The IRS often looks very unfavorably at some of these tactics, and it only affects people who are affected by this estate tax, and that means they have tens of millions of dollars of value in their estate. Not you and me. Usually promoted by unscrupulous insurance agents, and the problem with this estate planning tool is that you won't know if you're successful or not because you'll be dead. And you can leave it to your heirs to deal with the consequences. And then, again, the insurance industry is going to say, oh, but you can use life insurance to save money for retirement or children's education. Again, these are the whole life policies for uninformed, stupid people. So the only reason is the first one. You buy life insurance to protect those who would be left in serious financial trouble if you passed away prematurely. So, here's the wealthy barber. Again, Mr. David Chilton, thank you very much. People should buy life insurance so that when they die, their assets combined with their insurance proceeds can allow for the proper winding down of their financial affairs and provide the desired standard of living for their dependents. Really, life insurance is better termed financial protection for dependents, or income replacement insurance. I like the first one, financial protection for dependents. Oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. See, life insurance, are they going to bring you back to life? No, it doesn't work that way. Your home burns down, they build you a new home. Your car gets in a wreck, they buy you a new car. But no, they don't give you a new life, but we call it life insurance. But we're really not insuring our life. We're insuring the financial well-being of people who depend upon us. Cool. Slide number 5. How does it work? What is the basis of life insurance? Well, mortality tables provide odds on your dying based on your age, your sex, your occupation. Oh, the insurance companies are very, very smart, folks. Your premium is based on your life expectancy and the projections for the payouts for persons who die. When you buy life insurance, folks, you're essentially betting the insurance company that you will die prematurely. It's a bet you hope you lose. You don't want to die. I mean, everyone's going to die, right? You millennials, who knows, 120, 130, supposedly the first person who's going to live to 150 has already been born. But you only buy life insurance in case of your premature death. So you hope you don't die prematurely. And so does the insurance company. They don't want you to die because that means they got to pay out the insurance premium. I mean, not the insurance premium. They have to pay out the insurance face value, the amount of insurance that you bought. And, folks, they have a very good idea of how many people will die, how many people will live. They don't know who, but they have tremendous information gathering tools and statistical analysis, and these people who do this are called actuaries. So if you like math, it's really a fun, I'm a big statistics fan, right? My undergraduate degree is math, and I spent 3 semesters of statistics and had a blast. I know that might sound a little odd to some of you, but it is fun. And so if you are a math major, if you like math, this is a great job to get into. And one company, what was that again? Metropolitan Life, yeah. They have a game called the Longevity Game. Now, you might have to, if you click on that link, or it's also in Canvas and on the class website, you may have to allow Adobe Flash, because Adobe Flash is disappearing technological-wise, and some browsers now will not automatically let you run it. You have to say, okay, it's okay for you to run this game. And it's quite fun. We do it in the face-to-face class, so play with it. Okay? And they'll tell you. You know, you're going to live to 92. You're going to live to 78. You're going to live to 88. And they're pretty darn close, you know, statistically, right? Tomorrow you can get kissed by a bus and it's game over. But still, they're pretty darn good at what they do, the insurance companies. They better be. They're making enough money doing it. Slide number 6. There are 2 types of insurance companies. You know what? We want you to remember it, of course, for an exam, but you'll quickly forget it. But there's a reason why, which we'll say on the next slide. There are basically 2 types. Stock life insurance companies, which are private, you know, well, they're publicly, some are publicly traded, but they're owned by the company, the shareholders. And obviously, this makes up the vast majority, because three quarters of this type of companies are shareholder companies. And they sell what are called non-participating policies. The amount of the premium stays the same. In 2017, the last data we have, is 70%. Now, all this data, if you're, again, if you're into statistics and data, the mother load is the American Council of Life Insurers fact book. And it comes out in the late year, so like October, September of the, so you don't find out, you know, previous year. So 2018 didn't come out until October 2018, so we find, you know, 2017 data in that. And then in 2019, we'll find the 2018 data, not until October or so. So we're going back to 2017, 70% of the policies were non-participating. And all other things being equal, that's what you want. You want to know, hey, I'm going to make this premium every year. But there's an exception to the rule sometimes. There are companies called mutual life insurance companies, which are owned by the policyholders. And there are fewer, and actually they're more and more of them are turning into stock mutual fund companies, stock life insurance companies. But they sell participating policies. What is it? What's the difference, Payano? You know, the non-participating policy, you know how much you're going to pay every year, $400 a year or whatever. Whereas with a non-participating policy, you know what? The premium is $600. Well, why would I go with this? Relax. Hang on a minute. We are giving you a policy dividend of $400. So really, your dividend is only $200. It's not they shouldn't call it a dividend. They should call it a refund, or they're just not charging you what they say they're going to charge you. And the reason they can do that is because they are, you are participating in the risk management, which is what a life insurance policy is. And your particular group has done very, very well. And there are fewer folks in your group that have passed away. So we can refund, again, they call it a policy dividend, but don't worry, it's not most, when you say dividend, the IRS perks up their ears and says, oh, did somebody get a dividend? No, it's not a dividend. When we get the stocks, we'll learn about dividends. But it's a refund. And so if your group does very well, in terms of not that many people passing away, you're going to pay less than the non-participating policy. But what's the caveat? If all of a sudden there are several people in the group who pass away, they have the option to raise the dividend, not the dividend, the premium, up to the point where they told you this is the max you're ever going to pay. And so normally we would want to go with a non-participating policy, right? Well, there are some groups, and teachers are one of them. Teachers tend to live a whole lot longer than the rest of the population. So if you're in a group of teachers, and there's a company called TIAA, Teachers Insurance Annuity Association, which traditionally only dealt with educators, but now they compete with the rest of the companies in the general population. Excuse me. But they had tremendous participating policies that had great policy dividends. Because we teachers tend to live a lot longer than our students because we give our stress to our students. Yes, we do. I'm just teasing. But so you really should know this. And, of course, I apologize. You'll probably forget it after the exam because it's just something that's a little bit obscure. But it's something to know about. Okay, and if, of course, you go into the insurance industry, which so I hope some of you will because everybody needs insurance, and it may be not that exciting, but it pays the bills, dear students. Slide number 8. Now, very important. Do you need life insurance, dear students? Well, ask yourself a very simple question. Is there anyone, are there any people who depend upon my income for their living expenses? If the answer is yes, then it's not a question of whether or not you need insurance. It's how much, right? The target market are young couples or young single parents with young children. That's the target. These are the people who really need life insurance. But if the answer is no, nobody depends upon you, then you don't need life insurance. It's that simple.
Don't you wish it were? Because the insurance industry thinks you need life insurance. An insurance agent's going to say you need life insurance. And this is what you're going to hear, folks. Slide number 9. But even if you're single, you will be told by an insurance agent, of course you need life insurance. Your policy is acting as a savings vehicle. Insurance is cheaper when you are younger, and you should buy insurance now while you are healthy and can get it. Your response to each of these should be nonsense, nonsense, and nonsense. The rate of return is awful, as we'll see later on when we get to an illustration. Why should you buy something you don't need? Because it's cheaper. Oh, okay. No, you don't need it. Don't buy it, even if it's cheaper. And there is a grain of truth to this last one. But really, only 2% of people are turned down. And many this times, these are people who should know better. They had the two children, the 2.3 kids in the yard or whatever, and they should have bought the life insurance when they were young, two years and 4 years. 10 years later, now the children are 12 and 14, a very sensitive age, and one of the parents comes down with cancer or whatever, however horrible premature situation occurs. Now, you think the insurance company is going to give you life insurance if you got HIV or hepatitis B? No, they're not going to sell it to you. So when you have the children, that's when you should buy it. And chances are you're not going to be turned down. Slide number 10. And so, should you ever buy life insurance for a child? No. Never, never buy life insurance for a child. I don't care what the cute little thing in the remember the benevolent machine, the insurance companies being part of it, knows all, sees all. Your child is born, that gets stuffed into dozens of databases, and all of a sudden you're going to start getting stuff in the mail with the Gerber little baby with the chubby cheeks, and, oh, buy life insurance for your child. Let me ask you a question. Would you be devastated emotionally if your child dies? Well, of course, right? Obviously. When people had 10 or 12 children and 7 of them passed away, it was just part of life. Now, if one child passes away, the whole world takes notice. But would you be devastated financially if your child dies? No, excuse me for being callous, but you'll be better off financially if your child dies. I know that sounds horrible, but think about it. No orthodontia, no quinceañera. You don't have to take them to the trips, 3 different colleges around the country who they want to go to, and then they wind up going to Southwestern. Excuse me for being callous, but you'll be better off financially if your child passes away. Yeah, here $10, only $10 a month, and think about the funeral if the child passes. Think about it, big deal. And by the time the child is 18, you'll have enough money in that account to buy one book when they go to college. Yeah. Don't ever buy life insurance for a child. It's that simple. Wait a minute. What if the child is a child actor and pulling down a very good salary, and the family is dependent upon that salary? Okay, there's the exception that proves the rule, but how often does that happen, right? So, slide number 11. What if you have children? Oh, yeah, here's the target market, as the marketers like to say. Young married couples or single people with one or more children almost always need life insurance. And the question for them is not do we need it, no, how much do we need? And often the answer is more than you think. And we'll discuss how much in a bit, so stick with us, okay? So let's now, on slide 12, think about the non-wage earner spouse. This is fewer and fewer households, but let's say you have a stay-at-home mom or a stay-at-home dad. It makes sense to have some insurance on the non-wage earner spouse. Why? Because they're providing services, right?
you want to have enough insurance to pay off the debts. Well, we'll discuss that later on. It's just much less stressful. If someone of the spouses have died, it's stressful enough to pay off all the debts, then at least your household is free and clear. But you also want to be able to replace the services that the non-wage earner spouse provided. But there's a caveat here, because life is always never that simple. Men usually remarry quickly. If there's a mother, a stay-at-home mother who passes away with children, the man is usually married within a year or two, three at the most. Whereas women say, been there, done that, no more. Thank you very much. I'll take care of my children that are alive. I don't need another child, an adult grown child. And what is this list here? Number one is married men. Number two is single women. Number three is married women, and number four is single men. Now, this is the most, number one, married men, and these are the least, number four. This isn't my research. This is according to sociologists. Married men are the happiest people. Single men are the most unhappiest people. Single women are the next happiest, and married women are the next unhappiest. Right. So married men, they want to get married again. Women who lose their husbands say, no, thank you, been there, done that. And the single men are the most unhappiness. The single men say, well, the married men, the sociologists, the psychologists, the demographic folks, studies say that married men actually live longer than single men. And the single men said, oh, it just seems that like that. Yeah, that's why if you want to live forever, you get married, because every day will seem like an eternity. So what's the takeaway? Married men really don't need that much insurance for their women, for their wives, their stay-at-home wives, because they're probably going to get remarried soon. Whereas if the mother is the breadwinner and we have a stay-at-home husband, stay-at-home dad, that woman should buy a goodly amount of insurance on her spouse because she's probably not going to get remarried quickly. Everyone's different, but that's the reality. Let's continue. Slide number 13. Let's take a look at some examples. Who needs life insurance? Does a young married couple with no children need life insurance? Maybe. It depends on the situation. But if they're both wage earners, and maybe to pay off, maybe they own a home together, and it would be difficult for the one person to make the mortgage payment. But maybe not. Maybe they both, either one could go on their own, fine with financially without any problems. But how about a young married couple with two children? Yeah, there's the target market. Where do you see the life insurance quotes? It's got a husband and a wife and two kids, and they're all happy. So they need life insurance. How about a single adult? No. How about a unmarried couple? Probably not. Maybe, depending on the situation. How about a single person, a single adult who is a partner in a business? Is someone dependent upon you financially? See, partners, basically that's what marriage is a partnership. And partners are kind of married. They're depending on each other financially. So often partners in a business will have life insurance on each other so that if one of them passes away, the other partner or partners can buy out the heirs, maybe the spouse, maybe the kids, and go on their merry way. If they don't have the financial wherewithal to pay the spouse or the heirs, now their business, their partnership is at risk. So we have to think about these things. How about a married couple with children, but both parents are high wage earners? In other words, either one could easily deal with the financial burdens. No. Well, wait! What if they both pass away? Right. I mean, that's not likely. It's very, very unusual. Car crash, plane crash, whatever. But there is insurance that will pay only if both individuals pass away. It's very, very cheap. Why? Because it just doesn't happen that often. But you have to think about these things. Now, how about that middle-aged couple? Children gone, house paid off. No, they don't need life insurance anymore. They've gone through this time when there are people who are dependent upon them, and now they don't need life insurance. But what about that same middle-aged couple that's taking care of one of their more of their aged parents? Oh my goodness! Do you think the life insurance industry is going to want to pay them any? Going to want to sell them any life insurance? No. No, because they're getting into their 50s and 60s, and then life insurance just becomes outrageously expensive. So that's a situation that occurs, but there's not a whole lot of planning you can do. Some of the insurance agents say, that's why you need whole life. Ugh. It's not likely to happen, and even if it does, you can deal with it, in my humble opinion. Wait, we're going to get to term and whole life very soon. Slide number 14, estimating your life insurance requirements. Well, these are all from our book, and none of them are very, very good, so forget about them. This is the important one, slide 15. We went through that slide pretty quickly, didn't we? Yeah, don't worry about it. None of them are very good. This is the best one, and this, of course, is from Mr. David Children. And he's not the only one. There's other tomes that describe this process, but he does it very well, as I said, and so go read the book. It's still in print, but it's the numbers are kind of old. So, but don't worry about it. All the concepts are fabulous. Get out your financial statements. You remember them from chapter 2? I hope you have them tacked onto your refrigerator or your desk somewhere that you're busily fixing them, because it takes a few months to get them dialed in, fine-tuned. So get out your financial statements. Now, use your net worth statement to total your debts. Car loans, credit cards, student loans, mortgage. And start with at least this much life insurance. Why? Because the surviving spouse and the surviving family will be debt-free. It's enough dealing with the emotional turmoil when a spouse passes away. Not having to deal with any financial burden by wiping the debts clean is a really good place to start, in my humble opinion. It ain't going to help the emotional problem, but at least it helps the financial burden. And then what you do is you create a second cash flow statement without the person's income and without the person being alive, because you don't know, now maybe you don't need two cars anymore. You don't have to feed that person. You don't need a second phone. It's going to reduce your expenses. That's an old Woody Allen joke. Don't think of death as bad. Think of it as a serious reduction in your expenses. Right. Now, this will tell you how much income the surviving family will need. Determine the principal needed to generate that income. And that's something we'll learn how to do later on. We get to investments, what are reasonable expectations, reasonable returns from various investments. You add the first amount, the debt, to the second amount, the principal, and that tells you how much life insurance you need. And if that sounds too darn daunting or too much work, remember that the rule of thumb is 7 to 10 times your annual salary, depending upon your level of debt. So if you're making $50,000, you should really have about $500,000 of life insurance. It's very rough, but it's not a bad estimate. It's a great start. And then look at your debt level, because that's the one kicker, the debt level. So that's what I'm going to ask you to do in your assignment. You're going to first ask yourself, do you need life insurance? And many of you, you're young, you don't have a spouse, you don't have kids. You don't need life insurance. So, no. Here you go. If you do need life insurance, okay, we want you to go through this this process. And, of course, contact me or a trusted real estate agent who will treat you right and go through that process, because you need life insurance. And then the third thing that you'll do, whether or not you need life insurance, is go get a quote. If you don't need life insurance, just get a quote for $500,000 or $1 million or however much you want. And if you do need life insurance, go get some quotes, because you know what? You need life insurance. You don't want your kids unprotected. Slide number 16. Finally, we've been dancing around these two terms, term life and whole life, and now we're finally going to nail them down and at the same time nail the insurance industry to the wall, because there are two types of life insurance. The first one is called term life, also sometimes called pure life, and that's the only type of life insurance. Wait a minute, Pam, you just told me that there are two types of life insurance. Now you're telling me that term is the only type? Relax, just wait. We'll come back to this in a moment or two. This is a protection for a specified period of time, the term, 10, 20 years. 20 years is very typical. 30 years. Why is 20 years typical? Well, because the kids are 2 and 4, and you're not going to have any more, at least you're not going to plan to have any more. And then 20 years later, they're 22 and 24. You see why 20 is very popular? Now, if your kids are 12 and 14, do you need 20 years? No, 10 years. It'll be a lot cheaper. So think about that. Of course, if they're 2 and 4 and you want to have a whole lot more, you might want to get 30 years, and that's going to be more expensive. If you don't pay the premium, coverage stops. A renewability option means that at the end of the term, you can renew the policy without having a physical, but they don't want you at the end of the term. The price will just skyrocket. Why? Because you're getting closer to the 50s and 60s when they don't even want to touch you anymore. There's a conversion option that allows you to change your policy from term to whole life without a physical, if you're uninformed enough to actually buy a whole life policy, which you're going to be informed and you'll never buy a whole life policy. And this is our brave hero! Yippee! Hooray! Term life is... Yeah, I know, it's insurance. Not that exciting. But really, this is what you want. You want term life. Because it's going to be a whole lot cheaper. Plus, you're going to be able to save away far more than if you followed the insurance company's recommendations. Because the second type is whole life insurance, also called straight life, ordinary life, cash value life, cash life, adjustable life, variable life, universal life, variable universal life, etc., etc., etc. Why do they keep changing the name? You pay a premium as long as you live. Wait a minute. Why would I need life insurance when I'm in my 70s and 80s? Amount of the premium depends upon your age when you start the policy, provide death benefits, and accumulates a cash value, hence the term cash value life. You can borrow against the cash value or draw it out in retirement, but look carefully at the rate of return. It's almost always abysmal. The evil villain. Why do they keep changing the name? Well, it's very simple. Every few years, people figure out they're being screwed, and so that instead of stopping to sell the stuff, they just change the name. Yeah, right, as we discuss on slide number 18, every 5 to 10 years, the insurance industry changes the name of the whole life insurance because eventually consumers get hip to how they're being screwed. They just change, to confuse the issue, they just change the name. They will never stop selling this stuff because it's so profitable. The newest spin, dear students, is permanent life insurance. That's what they're calling it now, permanent, right? They're not calling it whole life or, I mean, some people, they still, the universal policies are still fairly popular, but this permanent whole life. Wouldn't you rather really have permanent life insurance instead of just temporary term life insurance? Well, let me ask you a question. Do you have permanent car insurance? Do you have permanent homeowner's insurance? No. You buy insurance, it's a bet you hope you lose. You don't want your car crashed or stolen. You don't want your house burned down, and you don't want to die prematurely. But you do it because it could happen. And so there's no reason to have permanent whole life policies because you're not going to live forever. Slide number 19. So to review, the term life insurance is basically, excuse me, life insurance without a savings component, sometimes called, as we said, pure life insurance. Whole life insurance is life insurance with a savings component. Well, what's the big deal, Payano? I mean, if the insurance company is offering to provide you with life insurance and a savings plan, why not let them? I mean, why do you have such a terrible axe to grind? Why are you so down on these whole life policies? Well, dear students, let me tell you. Slide number 20. If you go out there today and are in good health and you're a 32-year-old male, it's going to be cheaper if you're female, and you want a 20-year policy because the kids are 2 and 4, you're going to pay about $20 a month, $250 per year. And so I want you to look at it's in Canvas, it's on the website, the illustrations, lifeinsure.com. They're not this one website out of dozens. The cool thing about this one is that it gives you instant quotes, which is very reasonable, folks. You don't pay $20 a month. You pay, give them $250 for the year and be done with it. If you want that same $500,000 worth of protection, but instead you get a whole life policy, a straight, an ordinary, a universal, a variable, universal variable, permanent life insurance, and you're a 32-year-old male in very good shape, you're going to pay $250 a month. $2,500, $3,000 a year. So you starting to see any difference yet? What if a company came up to you and said, again, this is from The Wealthy Barber, and Mr. Chilton nails it, to save at our institution, you must buy insurance, life insurance. You must pay for it, even if you don't need it. We'll take everything you deposit in the first few years for ourselves. In future years, we'll charge you to deposit money into your savings account. You can borrow the money anytime, but we'll charge you interest. If you happen to die while this loan is outstanding, we'll decrease the amount we were to pay your beneficiaries by the outstanding amount of the loan. And if you don't borrow from this account, but you do die, we'll pay the beneficiary the face amount of a policy. We'll keep your savings for ourselves. Doesn't that sound like stealing? Oh, and by the way, we don't offer the greatest rates of return, usually between 1 or 2% or less. See any difference yet? Slide 22. Insurance companies are regulated by the states. For the last 50 years, virtually every insurance commissioner's office in every state has publicly stated that term life is a better deal for consumers than whole life. Virtually every consumer's group recommends term life insurance over whole life. Check out Consumer Reports. How about now? Slide 23. Do you now understand buy term and invest the difference? Buy term, take the money you were going to give to the life insurance company to invest for you. You invest it, you'll do a whole lot better off than anything the life insurance company gives you. And if you are an insurance agent and you're really angry at me or an insurance company, let's have at it. Show me your best policy, and I'll show you what I recommend to individuals. And if you can beat out ours, I'll buy yours. And if we beat out yours, you buy ours. And I've told that when I've gotten into sometimes very heated arguments with people. One guy was about ready to punch me. They say, well, you're not comparing apples to apples. And I say, you're right. I'm not. We're not comparing apples to apples. We're comparing apples to rotten fruit. And so don't do it. But Mr. Insurance Agent, Ms. Insurance Salesperson will tell, with our whole life policy, our variable life policy, our universal life policy, our permanent life policy, you get forced savings. Most people don't have the discipline to buy term and invest the difference. Even with the best of intentions, they will not do it. Do you understand what they're saying? You're stupid. It's nonsense. If you have the discipline to make the payments to the life insurance company, surely you have the discipline to make the payments to your own savings or investment plan. Use an automatic contribution from your checking account 1 month. $250 goes to the life insurance company, and all the other 11 months, $250 goes into your own investment. I mean, it's a no-brainer, right? But what's going to happen? That $250 that you pay to the life insurance company, the agent's going to get, you know, about $70. Maybe more, maybe less. That's their first year commission. It goes down every year after that. The whole life policy, that agent's going to get $1,500 the first year. And then it goes down. But still, the agent wants you to buy the whole life policy. So do you see why we call term life insurance the only type of life insurance? It doesn't matter which type you buy. You're still paying for protection for your dependents in the event of your death. You're still buying protection. With term life, you're only paying for that protection. But with whole life, you are paying far more for that protection, plus you're being tapped for an awful savings plan that you may not even get to use. And lastly, if you do invest the difference, by the time you are nearing retirement, you will not need life insurance anymore because you'll be self-insured. You're paying down your debt, you're investing, if you bought a house, you're paying down the mortgage, and you're investing, and your retirement accounts are quite healthy, thank you very much. You don't need life insurance anymore. You're self-insured. Cool. That's what we're here for. That's what we're here, right? That's why we're taking a class to learn about financial planning. So, slide 25. So, let's take a look. Again, this is from the 2008 American Council of Life Insurers Fact Book. In 2017, there were 6.2 million whole life policies sold and 4.1 million term policies sold. 60% of the policies that were sold in 2017, this number bounces up and down a little bit, but not much. Over half, 60% are whole life policies, and 40% are term. Why? Because if you're a life insurance agent, you want to sell whole life because you got to make your boat payment. Baby needs new shoes, whatever, you're going to get paid more. And so these agents have convinced themselves that they are doing something good for their clients by selling them whole life, when they're really not. The clients are going to be better off, in my humble opinion, and again, you want to show me something that does a better job, I'll be happy to take a look at it, but I don't believe it will. Okay, so you got that. 60% of the policies are whole life, 40% are term. But on slide 26, we find that the amount of insurance issued is only 30% whole life and 70% term. In other words, about $500 billion of the life insurance issued was whole life, whereas over $1.1 trillion was term life. Over twice as much. Wait a minute. I don't understand. How can there be more whole life policies, 60% versus 40%, and yet only 30% of the amount of insurance put into force was whole life policies? Well, it's actually very simple. Slide 27. The number of whole life policies is far greater than the number of term life policies, mostly because life insurance salespeople are going to get far greater commissions. But the amount of insurance in force for term life is far greater than whole life. Because term life is far less expensive than whole life, you can buy the amount you actually need. So, dear students, after the insurance agent has convinced the poor slob that she needs whole life, the agent then sells her far less insurance than she needs because the poor slob cannot afford to pay the huge premiums for the amount of insurance her family needs. Think about it. He has convinced her that she needs life insurance, and she does. She has kids. She needs life insurance. Can she afford $250? No. How much can you afford? $100. Okay, we'll sell you $120,000 worth of life insurance for $100. But she needs $500,000. So now if she actually does pass away, she doesn't have enough life insurance. I think that personally, if I were king of the world, which I'm not, this behavior should be considered criminal. Because if she actually were to die prematurely, her family would suffer. And I know people think, Piano, you're so harsh. Why are you saying this? Well, look. Go look at the results. And here in the face-to-face class is when we would take a look at the whole life illustration. And this is an actual policy that shows a gentleman who was paying $60 a month for $50,000 worth of life insurance that he didn't even need because he was told he would, you know, it would he wasn't married. He didn't have kids. Never had kids. And then in the year 20, he still was making these $60 a month payments. And I explained to him, what should I do? I said, I would cancel it and take whatever money's in there out. So you take a look at that whole life illustration and you'll see. And there's a presentation for you to go through. Okay? So slide number 28. There are others. There are other types of life insurance, group life insurance, which is always term and usually provided by an employer or your credit union or something like that. It's often a very good deal. Not always. It's sometimes free and you don't have to do a physical. For example, I might be wrong on this. I think the faculty and the administrators get $50,000, and the classified staff, the the clerks and the plumbers and all the other people who keep the college going, I think they get $25,000. But I'm not sure. And why would they do this? Well, what the insurance companies go to the credit unions and the businesses and say, look, we'll give your employees a little bit of insurance, maybe we'll give them more and you pay us something. But at the same time, we get to go to these people. And go to your employees or your clients or your members of your credit union and on your behalf. And we say, we're doing this for Mission Federal Credit Union. We'll give you $1,000 of free life insurance. By the way, do you want more? So they have a ready market. They have warm leads. People are already associated with the good with their credit union or bank or whatever. And so that's how they, that's how they market themselves. Credit life insurance is stupid. Don't do it. The credit card companies are going to want, don't you want to be protected? No. I mean, if you have credit card debt and you die, forget about it. That's their problem. It's not your problem. Don't protect the lenders. Don't do that. Obviously, if you're married, then your spouse is probably going to get dinged. But I've seen situations where when one spouse, it was not in, if it's in both spouses' name, then you have to worry. But if it's in just one spouse's name, the credit card companies just wrote it off. They said, don't bother. Don't buy it. And then accidental death, or sometimes called double indemnity. These policies only pay if the person dies in an accident. Well, if you're young, it's more likely you'll die in an accident than from a disease, but it doesn't matter how the person dies. Is he dead? Oh, how sad. How did he die? Oh, good. An accident. Oh, maybe. So, don't buy it. And sometimes these accidental death policies are more expensive than what you can find for regular, life insurance, what you need. And it doesn't matter how you die, whether sickness or accident. So, don't get it. Yeah. Slide number 29. Some of the contract provisions. Okay, we're in the home stretch. Everybody stretch. Okay. Name your beneficiary, contingent beneficiaries. Update it when necessary. Just because you get divorced doesn't mean that the beneficiary changes. Get the spouse, their name off the policy. If you commit suicide within the first 2 years, they will not pay the face amount. And this is to keep people from who are, according to the psychiatrist, if you're considering suicide, it's a mental illness. So they don't want you to commit suicide to save your family or something like that. And the same thing is true for the misstatement of age. If you lie about your age and in the first 2 years they catch you or you die, they're gonna. I'm not in the first 2 years. It doesn't matter. They'll go back as far as they need to. If you lied about your age, they won't pay the face value. In both cases, the suicide or the misstatement of age, they will just pay the premiums. They'll give you back the money you paid. So remember that because it might be on the exam. If you are, this is called a viatical settlement or accelerated benefits. If you've been diagnosed with a very serious illness, they will often allow you to take the money sooner. And this is very helpful for people who are, probably in hospice and usually financially strapped. So they'll lower the amount they were going to pay, but it's for people who are in serious illness and expected to pass away within 6 months or so. If you are disabled, this is one of the cool things that the insurance companies do, so let's give them a kudos. If you become disabled, they waive, meaning they forego the premium, which is nice. And if you have a cash value whole life policy, there's that loan provision we talked about. We don't want that. This is the thing that drives people nuts. They can't believe it. They have a whole life policy, and they realize that they're being screwed, so they stop paying it. So what does the whole life policy do? What do the insurance companies do? They start eating the cash value. They start using the cash value to pay the premiums. Oh, you don't want to have your policy lapse, do you? Yes, I do. Give me my money. Go away. Ooh. And then when you see the presentation on the illustrations and the quotes, the life insurance quotes, you'll see the return of principal for term life policies. It's really a hybrid. It's a mixture of a whole life and a term life policy. It's not usually a good idea, in my humble opinion, but you check it out. In other words, people say, hey, I paid this thing for 20 years and I didn't get anything out of it. Well, good. That means you're still alive. But I want something out of it. So they'll charge you a lot more, not as much as a whole life policy, but a lot more than a term life policy. And they'll invest the difference, and hopefully at the end of the 20 years, they'll have they're not stupid. They'll make sure they do. They'll have enough money to pay you back the principal. Oh, cool. I don't think it's a good idea. Watch the presentation on insurance quotes. Slide number 30. How should you choose an insurance agent? Well, there's a saying in the industry. Life insurance is sold, not bought. Get a good referral. Is the person willing to take the time to answer your questions and find a policy that is right for you? Are they available when needed? Do they ask about your financial plan? Do you feel pressured? Most importantly, are they still trying to sell you whole life when you've already told them 3 times that you want their life policy? Kick them in the butt as they go out the door. Okay. I feel better. Slide number 31. How do you obtain a policy? Well, you got to apply. You have to provide your medical history, and they are going to do a physical. Not if it's a group policy, but they're going to do a physical, and they're going to take your blood and remember the Medical Information Bureau. Oh yeah, read every word. Make sure they explain it to you. You have 10 days to change your mind. And why is that? Well, these are whole life policies again for uninformed people. You see, when people get upset about insurance being screwed, they go talk to their erected representatives in Sacramento in California. And the representatives, you know, they listen to voters the best they can, and they start saying, well, we should do something about this, and maybe we should put more restrictions on these whole life policies. And the insurance industry jumps up and down and says, oh, you don't want to limit choices? Here's what we'll do. We'll give people a 10-day waiting period to change their minds. Well, what is that? You know, you already convinced them to buy something and they don't. That's not in their best interest. You think they're going to figure it out in 10 days? Usually takes 10 years. So that's how it works, folks. That's compromise, which means nothing gets done. Give your beneficiaries and your lawyer a photocopy because, you know, you're passed away. They need to know what to do. There's settlement options. Slide 32. These are the options for the choices for how you want the money paid out. Again, you're dead if your heirs have to make the decision. Actually, you can make the decision ahead of time. You can say, I want the lump sum payment to be paid to my beneficiaries. Or you might say, you know what, my beneficiaries are not too good with money. Maybe they want the limited installment plan or the life income option. Because almost always, the best choice is to have the money paid out, and then you, the beneficiary, invests it. And the insurance companies have these other plans. Why? Because they don't want to pay out the money. You know, $500,000, hey, we'll pay you $50,000 over the next 10 years, every year. Or we'll pay you a certain amount of money for the rest of your life. Or, hey, we're insurance companies. We're like bankers. You know, we're the invisible bankers. You can leave the money with us. We'll pay you interest. You can take it out as you need it. Well, on slide 33, we find out that no matter what the life insurance company says, take the lump sum, invest it, leave a letter of instruction or talk to your heirs or tell the insurance companies, I want the lump sum to be sent to my heirs. By the end of this class, you will have a rudimentary knowledge of investments that will give you a rate of return that is at least 2 to 5 times better than anything the life insurance company will offer you. Because this is their business. They're not stupid, right? The insurance companies love to prey upon the surviving spouse, and it's often a woman who may not necessarily, and a lot of times are changing, folks, but the women are a lot smarter and not putting up with our goofball stuff that we men do. But they put their arm, we'll give you an income for the rest of your life, little lady. We'll screw you for the rest of your life with an annuity. But, you know, that's why you don't want them to do that. You want to educate your heirs, or if you're the heir, get educated, and you'll find a much better investment, in my humble opinion. Again, if you're a life insurance agent or a life insurance company, you want to come after me, let's talk. Let's compete. Slide 34. Excuse me. Should you switch policies? My apologies. Should you switch policies? Well, maybe. Only switch a term life policy if the benefits exceed the cost of getting another physical paying policy setup costs. Look at the apples to apples. Look at how much they're going to charge you, the bottom line. And maybe it's a good idea, but don't cancel the old policy until the new policy is in force. Let's say you cancel the old policy, go apply, and all of a sudden you've contracted hepatitis C or whatever, and you didn't even know you had it, right? Or you have the beginnings of cancer, something like that. So make sure that you've made the payments to the new policy and you contact them. Yes, it's enforced. No, you can't cancel it now. It's been so many days, I think 30 days or whatever. And so then cancel the old policy. Now, if you do switch policies, you're going to have to fill out a whole bunch of forms because, again, the industry was not in the best of the good graces with the regulators, so they now make us life insurance agents, if our potential client is switching policy, have them fill out a whole bunch of forms. Normally, the only reason people switch whole life policies is because a life insurance salesperson convinced them to switch. Why did they want them to switch? Because if they were uninformed enough, to buy a whole life policy in the first place, they're probably uninformed enough to switch to another policy. And the salesperson gets a ton of new commissions. Several years ago, a few insurance companies, which will remain nameless, Prudential, got into hot water for pushing elderly folks to switch policies. In fact, on the website, and I think it's in Canvas, there's a link to an article about a salesperson who got this elderly woman to buy, I don't know, 40, I don't remember, just many switch whole life policies. And he got barred from the industry, but he never went to jail. This guy should have gone to jail. He just shouldn't have gone to jail. It's criminal. You're basically stealing from people. They got the 10-day waiting period. Yeah, right. Slide 35. Financial planning with annuities. Now, this, again, is what the book does. They stick annuities into this chapter, but it belongs in the next chapter. An annuity is a financial contract written by an insurance company that provides you with a regular income, often for the rest of your life. This is not life insurance. This is an investment, not a particularly good investment in my humble opinion, but an investment nonetheless. And for some people, maybe it makes sense, but for the vast majority of us, no. The fees are outrageous, and the returns are not that great compared to comparative investments. So while annuities are insurance products, they really belong with investments and retirement planning. We'll revisit them again in next chapter. Why does the book include them? Because what happens in practice is the insurance companies try to get the beneficiaries to purchase an annuity with their life insurance benefits instead of taking the lump sum because they don't have to pay out $500,000 tomorrow, write a check for $500,000. They'd much rather pay these people a certain amount of money over the life of their life. And what they're saying to you is saying, don't invest it yourself. Oh, no, no, no. may get mediocre returns. Instead, give us the money. We'll make sure. We'll guarantee that you get mediocre returns for the rest of your life. Yeah, it's usual. The insurance annuities are not necessarily not good, in my humble opinion. Again, let's have it out, Mr. Insurance Agent, Miss Insurance Agent, Insurance Company. And remember, I'm an insurance agent. So slide 36. Do you need life insurance? Buy term and invest the difference. So as I promised, I hope I fulfilled that promise. Now you understand in 1 hour and, 33 seconds, what buy term and invest the difference is. Get a low-cost term life policy and the money that you would have paid to the whole life policy, invest it on your own, and we are going to see in very stark numbers how well you would have done if you had put $60 a month away with this insurance industry, put $60 a month away into bonds, $60 a month away into stocks, and then bonds and stocks, and you'll see you will have clobbered the insurance companies. You will have just done so much better. So, dear students, heed the Wealthy Barber's sage advice. If you need life insurance, if you don't need life insurance, don't buy it. But if you need life insurance, buy term and invest the difference. Okay, cool. All right, we're done. Get that insurance out of the way. It's very important, but now we're ready to start the best part of the semester, investments. See you in our next chapter where we do investing fundamentals and then take a look at bonds. Boring bonds, stodgy bonds, reliable bonds.